9 FM. Streaming
for the last 4 or 5 days, because nothing gets it going
like the New York
Knicks. The New York Knicks.
Yeah, I this is the same point we touched on last week. Going into this Eastern Conference Finals, the expectations was that the Knicks would have been competitive, and it's not that they've not been competitive. They've been competitive, but you could see there are one or two pieces that are missing. Indiana's playing terrific defense. It's something about Jalen Brunson right now that is just a step too slow. And I'm not sure if it's the pressure being put on by Naismith in the front court of the Pacers, but there's just something missing with him so far this series.
When I was watching the game yesterday, it looked like Brunson's trying to slow the game down way too much for his ISO ball. Granted, it works a lot of the time, but I feel he has to take those moments later in the game because look at that last three-point shot he took. To me, that was just, I would have rather had him say, hey, if they foul you, go to the line. See if we get them to miss a free throw in the next one. I'd rather a half-court shot than just run down the court and shoot it. But the defense isn't there for the Knicks right now. Bridges has been...
Is it just too much scoring on the end of the Pacers?
I think yes, but it's unexpected scoring.
Right.
Because you have Naismith coming out, hitting 6 threes in game one, and then he's hitting some big three. Like, every time... Pascal Siakam, I mean, with the Raptors, with Kawhi. Right. And it's scary because what he was with the Raptors could be a number one option, but it's a number two option.
Right. Well, what's been most bizarre about Pascal this last... He did the same thing in the semifinals. What he's been able to do in transition is what has made the difference in the Pacers. So you worded it as it's unexpected scoring. What I view it as is scoring in waves because... For some strange reason, when one player on the Pacers get hot, it's like a trigger effect that runs down the entire team. You have a spot where Naismith in game one, he was able to hit 6 threes to bring that game back into competition. And then, of course, Haliburton went on to win it. But you have people like Pascal. You have people straight up and down that bench that are coming out and saying, hey, we playing with house money right now. Let's go ahead and do it.
You know what I love like watching this series is when I see Miles Turner doing great stuff. And I'm just there like... Miles Turner could have been a Laker. We could always turn everything back to the Lakers. Buddy and Miles could have been. And this is what kind of hurts me with this team to a point where Buddy was on this team 2 years ago.
Right.
Like, this is almost the same exact. Well,
it is.
This is the team that they traded for. Yeah. This is the team that they traded for. And it's just like, it would have, granted, Steph got hurt. That didn't help the Warriors in their playoff. I think if Steph stayed healthy, they would have won that series. But it's just. That's the type of basketball Buddy needs, just running, flowing. It's beautiful basketball. That's all I can say. Like, the other series, I've watched maybe like 5 minutes of it. I haven't really been into it. I've just been into the Knicks versus the Pacers series.
And not to throw any disrespect or hate towards Buddy, I feel like watching Naismith the last couple of rounds, it's quite clear that he's a better fit than Buddy in this situation. No, not saying that he's a better shooter than Buddy. For some strange reason, he's just meshing well with Haliburton and getting it done. I'm not saying that Buddy wouldn't have done the exact same thing. I'm just saying it seems like right now Naismith is a better fit.
Sometimes in the playoffs, you got unexpected players who step up.
Right.
And they're the ones who make... like
because he did this in Boston.
No.
He was not this.
No.
He's not been... He was never this clutch player. He's never been this high-performer three-point shooter.
But then you got to look at it. So if Tyrese is doing well... If Miles Turner's doing well, now you're the fourth option. You're going to be open majority of the time. Like, what are they going to do? They're going to put their effort on the big three that they have. It's loose big three. Let's not think that it's a super team because it's far from it.
All right.
But it's like, now you're the fourth option. TJ McConnell, Benedict, I forget his last name. Anyways, 00.
All right.
What have you been doing?
Chilling.
Like...
Chilling.
I feel that that's the scary part with the Pacers because the depth is there. Like, they have the players that could come off the bench. TJ McConnell's going to give you those good minutes. Benedict, because I'm just going to call him by his first name. He's out there not playing how we know he could play.
Right.
Naismith is the one who just stepped up.
But see, again, and this is why I'm always cautious in, like, this late stage of the NBA playoffs. Because it's not like the Knicks have been playing terrible basketball.
No.
So it's been a situation where the Knicks have had decent leads. Well, in game one, they had a really good lead. In game two, they've been competitive all the way through. But it's just something in the final moments of these games where the Pacers say to themselves, bro, it's our game for the take a playoff.
Yeah, and the crazy thing with the Pacers is they're not out of any game. And they've shown it against the Cavaliers. They've shown it against the Knicks already. And if what Indiana did yesterday, if they play like that and they have a 5 to 10 point lead throughout the game, they're not losing.
All right.
They're not losing the game. I don't think the Knicks are built, even though they showed against the Celtics that they could come back, I don't think they could do it against the Pacers. I think the Pacers have more than the Celtics. I think the Celtics, people are going to not agree, but was a flash in the pan last season where everything was just going right for them. Like, everyone was, like, pretty much what the Pacers are doing this year is what the Celtics were doing last year. Timely shots, players stepping up. And not to say that they're going to win the championship, because I don't think so. But not to say that if they go next season, they're going to be as successful. It's just they're hot at the right time.
All right. But no, let me correct that record. It's not that they are not hot at the right time now, but the Pacers have been actively building this team. Mm-hmm. They have been on a steady climb the last couple of seasons. You see it last year. They made the run to the in-season tournament. They won that. This season, they came back. They did it. Now it's in the Eastern Conference Finals with a chance 2 games away from the NBA championship. This team has been steadily on the rise. And it couldn't happen to a better group of players. Rick Carlisle is in Indiana doing a hell of a coaching job.
People forget what he did with the Mavericks.
Yes.
And that is no small feat at all. Like, when you think of great coaches, you're going to be like Phil Jackson, Pat Riley, Greg Popovich. You know, you could go down the list and be like, yeah, these are great coaches. Rick Carlisle's up there. He just hasn't had, and I don't want to say the luck, but sometimes it's the luck that,
it's the luck,
that you have to have.
He's either been 1 year too late or 1 year too early.
Exactly.
He was the coach right after Larry Brown stepped away from the Pistons. He was that guy that took them over the hump for another run. Like, these are the kind of things that we don't think about when we think about Rick Carlisle, because he's been in a lot of good spots, but either a year too early or a year too late.
Yep.
But the Pacers right now, he seems to be the perfect coach in the perfect moment.
And this is almost like what happened with the Mavs when the Mavs went right with, they beat the Heat that year.
Yeah.
Like, you just have to be able to coach your team what the players are and not expect too much from them.
Right. But before we take it into half, we just want to flip the finals. Everybody saw OKC be one of the best teams, because Cleveland was up there this season as well. But OKC, when it came to the Western Conference, they were dominant from the start straight up to the end. There was no doubt who was the best team in the Western Conference Finals. Is this a clear runaway between them and Minnesota?
I think so. I mean, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, granted, I feel the referees are giving him too much. I don't discredit what he's doing.
All right.
But I just don't like the style he's playing, where it's like he's being incentivized to flop. He's being incentivized to bump on someone and then it's a foul. Just like the flagrant foul that was called. It's like, if you look at the replay, and this is one thing you always say, oh, the referees could look at the entire thing. If you look at the beginning of the replay, he pushes off number 3, what's his name? McDaniels.
Oh.
He pushes off McDaniels. Pushes off McDaniels. And then McDaniels pushes him on the back, right?
Oh, you're talking about the last play in game one. Well, not the last play.
Yeah, but you know what I mean. Like, it was like that. And yeah, what McDaniels did was too much. But also, you need to look back and be like, hey, that was a foul.
The way I look at it, it's almost, and we have Luka now, so these are the kind of things I now have to accept. But it's exactly what Luka has been doing the last 3 years in the league. You play this way where you create the contact and you expect the refs. Mm-hmm. He's not gone to the point where Luka is now, where Luka cries basically for every court. But Shai Gilgeous, he understands that all I have to do is make the contact, a lot of refs to see it, and I'm going to get the court. Eventually, where's that going to go? Now you have 2 more rounds if you get by Minnesota, just the championship. Does it carry through in the NBA Finals, or is it something that the refs are going to look at and be like, we have to put a stop to this? But that doesn't take away from the fact that he is clearly the best player in the NBA.
Oh, right, before we go into that, since I'm in Niles' seat, Big Blue Nation, MVP, what do you know about that? Lexington, Kentucky. Okay, we got that out the way, because he would have been very proud that his brethren from his university Could you believe he's the first MVP from Kentucky?
It shocked me.
That was a shocking stat.
Because I was like, wait, y'all had AD, Cousins, De'Aaron Fox, John Wall, all those guys. And I was like...
But think of the back in the day.
That is
like
true.
You would have think...
I was just thinking about the most recent John Calipari run.
But back in the day, too, like all the players that they brought out. But I think that OKC is Wolves. The Timberwolves is a good team. Like I said earlier, I think with Steph, the Warriors would have been them. And I think the Warriors would have been the best matchup for...
I still think they would have beaten the Warriors in probably five. The thing that this NBA playoff run has taught me is that the era of the super teams, completely over. Mm-hmm. The idea that teams could now literally go back to the idea of chalking up a really good team on paper and just running all the way to the... That's done. You have to find a team that can actually mesh well. Like, look at what OKC has been through the last two, three seasons. This is a team built on trades. Yep. This is a team built on free agency. That's the same case with the Pacers. A team built on trades, free agencies, just trying to find the right pieces to mesh together. So if those two teams end up in the NBA Finals, and we'll know by the time we hit next week's show, but if those two teams end up in the Finals, I think this is the most terrific thing for the NBA because you have two teams built on... Small market teams, but teams built what we used to call the right way. Just going through it, putting your pieces together, finding a star player to build around, and then going from there.
It's crazy because this all came from that Paul George trade.
Boy.
And when you... Like, I need to find the graphics that they have because it goes Paul George, right?
Yeah,
Clippers
right.
Receive Paul George. OKC receives... This pick, that pick, this pick, this player, this pick, this pick, this pick. And then what they ended up doing is they ended up trading a lot of those picks to get more future picks from teams. And it's just crazy how the NBA dynamic is this was a trade that happened, 4 years ago?
Yep.
The Paul George trade, somewhere around there.
So Paul George, the image I'm looking at is what all the players turned into. Mm-hmm. So they got Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, they got Jalen Williams, and they got picks that turned into, and get this is what really shocks me all the time, Jalen Williams, who's a tremendous player for them right now. You have Trey Mann, who is out there in the league doing good stuff. You have Jax Jr., he's not been there. You also have Dylan Jones, and to move it on and go a bit further, you still have two first-round picks left in the bundle. And to think about it like this, OKC gave up a lot to the Pacers to get when they were trying to put a player there with Westbrook. They gave up a lot. They realized it wasn't working. They flipped him on to the Clippers for a lot more than they gave up. So talk about a team just knowing how to work the market. OKC did a tremendous job.
But I feel OKC's always been that type of team that they build teams. Like, how long would this last? It will only last until players start having to get contracts. The same thing happened to them with James Harden, Westbrook, and KD. It got to a point where the three of them were asking for plenty of money.
But I think they're doing it a bit different now because if you look at the way they're spending money on players, like they brought in via trade, God, who used to play for us, Caruso. Mm-hmm. They brought in via trade a couple other key guys. So they understand now while we have the young talent, let's supplement that with one or two key pieces year by year. Move up, work that mid-level exception before we get into the luxury. Because you're going to get into the luxury when you get up there with Shai. And of course, Williams.
You win the championship, it doesn't matter.
That's true.
That's the whole thing. Like, I think a championship gives you like 4 years of freedom to be like, hey, we did this. We were able to get it done. But it's small market teams. So you got Minnesota, I would consider. Yeah. OKC, small Definitely. Market. Indiana, small market. And we're going in small market in terms of what NBA is. And then you got New York, which is the biggest market of.
So everybody thought if it was the prime time finals that the NBA would have wanted, it would have been the Timberwolves versus the Knicks.
Yeah.
But now the way it's shaping up, both teams all in a 2-0 lead, it's quite clear that we're kind of inevitably going to get to Pacers Thunder Finals, which if you told me at the beginning of the season, I would have not expected. Like, I don't think you could find any betting odds that had these two teams ending up in the finals.
Boy, if you had those betting odds, you might have been making a lot of money. Cash out now. But OKC, you could see the trajectory of OKC was moving up to, like...
That level.
They were going to be one of those top teams. Uh-huh. Indiana, they've always been middle of the pack. Like, regardless of what it is, like, with the play-in tournament last... It would have been last year?
Last year.
With the play-in tournament, they actually showed that... when it came to almost like playoff level type stuff, they were able to
compete.
Compete. And now, I don't know how long it's going to last for them.
That was going to be my next question.
This is pretty much, if it doesn't happen this year, what's going to happen next year? Because they might fall out to the 8th seed next year.
Let me ask it like this. Because if you look at these, the Final Four in the NBA, these are all prototypically young teams.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Pacers have a lot of questions because they have a lot of contract movements that could happen next offseason. But the Pacers are a relatively young team. The Knicks are technically a young team because they have Brunson, who has a couple of more years, and Towns is up there in age, but he's not super old. And then you come across to OKC, super young.
Mm-hmm.
You come across to teams like Minnesota, very young. Like, these are the situations you have to ask, is the future now for the NBA? How long do we expect these teams to float at the top?
I don't think it's too long. I think it's like 2-3 years at the most.
Because I saw a ridiculous stat the other day that shocked me. For the first time in a long time in the NBA, we've had
seven different
job
good, teams. Which is good.
It is good, but I'm not used to this kind of basketball.
You're not used to the parity now. And that was the whole, like, when the commissioner and everyone, they're all going to go on their soapbox and make, this is exactly what we planned for the NBA.
All right.
No, you really didn't. Like, you didn't. It's always going to be big markets, right? But the parity is great for the league, which just goes to show, A, how hard it is to win a championship.
All right.
How hard it is to win two in a row. Those Lakers teams that we saw winning three-peats, insane. Like, going to 10 straight NBA finals like LeBron. These are insane. It wasn't 10 straight, but you know what I mean. 8 straight.
It was 8.
It was 8.
No, technically. Well, yes,
it was 8.
It was a
break. But it's how insane those numbers are, because we always keep saying, and this just shows, people are getting better at basketball. Growing where...
Not just better, but I think organizations are getting better at understanding.
Yeah, but skill-wise, right. Now, you have players that are going to be... Like, look at Tyrese. Like, I was a firm believer when I saw him at Battle for Atlantis that he was going to be great. It was the debate between him and Cole Anthony, and they said, if you don't take Tyrese, you're dumb. Yeah, he's just a hooper. That's what it is. But it just shows how hard it is to win. But we get this every like 10 years with a small market team, because Dallas technically isn't a big market team.
They're not.
They will get a championship. So is this the year? And then is the cycle going to go back where then it's going to be the Lakers, the Celtics, the Heat?
I would hope so.
But you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, we're used to seeing this, and this, I believe this is what brings more fans in.
Mm-hmm.
More fans are watching the games. Because you could, even with the television numbers, this is the most people that who've watched. And I know the Knicks have a big part to do with it. But the Knicks Pacers game was the most watched game since the Celtics, whatever NBA finals.
Yeah.
This isn't the NBA finals. Now, what are the final numbers going to look like? Don't know. But it's just, I just love it. I feel it's more NFL-y what's going on.
NFL-y.
Yeah. I mean, it's like the NFL. Sometimes you have that one team that will make that run and the football you want to watch.
All right. But no, I just had to ask questions. When I saw the stat, 7 different champion in 7 years.
Who was the first one in that stat?
I think the first one in the stat would have been, if I go back 7 years, I think Toronto. Toronto.
When did LeBron win his?
For the Lakers, they count at the bubble, so it's in the middle. It in the middle.
I don't care what you say, but it that in the counts. Middle.
I think it would have been 3 on the list. So you had, technically speaking, the Warriors, the Raptors, and then you keep going down until you ended up where we at now.
But I wouldn't even include the Warriors on that because the Warriors came back.
Yeah, but there was a break off between a lot. Because don't forget, we were in the space where everybody was saying the Warriors dynasty is over.
Oh, yeah. That was the one when they beat the Celtics. Yes. I forgot about that. Yeah, that was the unexpected one.
Yeah. So, no, it's been a wild run the last couple of years. And you say the NBA probably didn't do this by design. I'm happy that it came out in the wash. We found some way to go back to the space where there was actually parity in the league, that any given year, you could have a team make a run like the Bucks did. The Bucks made a run to the championship, and the Bucks we know may not exist no more next year.
Boy.
So, like, that's the space we're in the NBA, and it produces good basketball. So, I'm not sure if OKC is going to be the team. The series could end this week, so I have to finish up.
Yeah, no, I just think the it's too much going on with the Thunder. They got everything right. They got the bench. They got the gelling. They got the starting five. For me, Minnesota only goes as far as Anthony Edwards takes them.
And he's limited. And
And it's people will be like, oh, it's crazy. Anthony Edwards, I feel, has to be the best player on the court for them to win. And he's not going to be the best player on the court if Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is on the court with him.
All right. So we're going to take it to halftime. And we come back from the break, we're going to tease some stuff going on in football, in the NFL right now, take a look at some stuff going on in baseball, and touch on local for a bit. Continue to listen in. This is The Accredited.
Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Streaming on guardiantalkradio.com and the Guardian Radio app. Nassau, Bahamas.
Savings plan that pays you unbeatable interest. Ask about our debt consolidation loans today. Call 356-7764.
Fidelity, we're good for you.
Always on the go? Missed a show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
Measles is on the rise around the world, and the Bahamas is at risk.
Which makes us very vulnerable as a nation for the possible outbreak of measles cases.
Saturday in May from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., the Ministry of Health and Wellness will host MMR immunization visits in South Beach, Coconut Grove, Fox Hill, and Elizabeth Estates. Clinics in these areas will remain open until 8 p.m. twice per week. Get your child immunized now.
The 2025 Samuel P. Hagan High School Soccer Nationals are here. May 15th through 16th in Grand Bahama. May 21st through 30th in Nassau at the Roscoe A.L. Davies Field. Top teams from Nassau, Freeport, Eleuthera, and Abaco battle for the crown in the Duncan Girls and J.S. Johnson Boys Division. Calling all junior Duncan groups, come out, bring the vibes, and rep your school. Inclusive matches, music, food, and family fun daily. Gates open at 3 p.m. Visit BahamasFA.net. Be there.
Since 1989, Joker's Wild Comedy Club has been the heart of laughter in the Bahamas. But now an era is coming to a close.
Get ready for my guy, comedian Tommy Davidson.
Tommy Davidson, along with featured comedian Kirk Green and house comedian Naughty. Don't miss your last chance to experience the magic. May 20th through the 25th, Joker's Wild Comedy Club. Admission $50. Get your tickets now at AtlantisBahamas.com/events.
Back to The Accredited. We're back in for the second half. If you want to join the conversation today, phone lines open 323-6232-325-4316, 325-4259, or toll free from the Family Islands at 242-300-5720. Text lines are also live. It's powered by BTC 422-GR96. That's 422-4796. Standard text rates apply. We also want to just tee up our team over at Going Places Travel. They have a really good promotion. Guardian Media Group and Going Places Travel want to take you on a 7-day cruise for four to Panama, Colombia, Curacao, and Aruba on Royal Caribbean, Serenade of the Seas. And here's the best part. No visa required. That's right. No visa required. You have four ways to enter, four ways to win. Fill out the form in the Nassau Guardian. Listen to Star 106.5 and Guardian Radio 96.9. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram, or make a purchase at Going Places Travel. Entry deadline is June 27, 2025, drawing on July 4, 2025. So pack your bags, get ready to soak up the sun and feel that ocean breeze. You and three loved ones sailing the high seas on a vacation. A cruise of a lifetime brought to you by The Guardian Media Group and Going Places Travel. certain conditions apply. So if you want to type in on, if you want to get in on that, please enter to win now. We have a call. Let's go to the phone lines. Caller, go ahead. Caller, are you there?
Hey, good afternoon. How you doing?
Pretty good. Go ahead.
I'm talking about the past, the present, and championships and this and that and the next. When do you think you would see, I don't think it'll be in our lifetime, somebody with 17 and 16 championship rafters in the roof?
Well, Boston is there now. Boston is at 18 now. Lakers are at 17. So I know a lot of people, they beg the question on how relevant a lot of those Boston championship was and some of the Laker ones. But we're there now. I think we're going to eventually see teams like Golden State, if they could get another star, another piece, they could eventually be there in the next 20 years. Same thing with the Heat, not 17, 18, but I think the Heat will get 10 championships in my lifetime.
But you know what? I don't understand how people ask these questions. How relevant those championships already were. I mean, we're talking about today.
Uh-huh.
How relevant they were today or how relevant they were.
How relevant they were at the time.
No, they're relevant.
At that time, they were just like any other sport. Whatever sport it is, they were going out there to compete to win.
So, no, I think the issue that comes about in a lot of those discussions is the caliber of the players that were allowed to compete at that time.
I agree with the caller on this one. If you win a championship, 18, 18, whatever, it's just like a gold medal in those first Olympics. No one questions those Olympians for winning those gold medals.
I think you have to, because if you have, and caller, you could join on this. I'm going to give you it in a second. If you have more quality players that are sidelined for whatever reason, whether it's race, whether it's country, whether it's ilk, whatever reason they're sidelined, you have to beg the question, what would the league look like if this player was included? Caller?
No, but what I'm saying is, I don't see the argument, because we talking about the player at that time, the training, the gym he was in, and all this kind of, the things they have now, the coaches that they have now, the coaches and the skills the coach himself has.
Right.
The money the owner has. Back in that time, it was still relevant as to how much money the owner had, how skillful the coach for the Boston Celtic was at that time, and the gyms and all the training, even the medical staff, the chiropractors, and all of that. They knew the best that they met. Now, any skills that has been improved on to where we are today.
Right.
So I don't think we can compare the John Havlicek to the Michael Jordan in the same year.
Caller.
John Havlicek, most people don't even know who number 17 John Havlicek was. Who number 0 Bill Russell was. I mean, Bill Russell was a guy, I think he was 6'10", used to have to go up against Will Chamberlain.
Right.
And many times at the end of the day, Boston will beat the hell out of Will Chamberlain.
See, let us get into that, caller. Thank you for calling. But relative to what he said, to a degree, he is right. Go ahead.
And I get what you're saying. And you're going to have to include segregation, race,
yeah,
all that. And it's in all sports, yes. But the majority, I think, is centered around the American sports scene. Because that's what we go with, the big four leagues. The American sports scene, how things could have been different if inclusion was there from the beginning. Yes, it could have been different. It would have been different. But I still feel that if you won a championship in XYZ and XYZ conditions, then it's still a championship.
It's not taking away the value of that championship. It's saying how much different looked if this was the case. So case in point, every time I have these conversations, this is where I take it. You look at what the Celtics did. I'm not talking about the 40s, 50s, and 60s Celtics. I'm talking primarily the late 50s, 60s, and 70s Celtics. When you have people like Iceman George Griffin out there, when you have people like Dr. J, those guys were forced into the ABA and only allowed to look at the NBA from a distance and see these guys celebrating when you know the better players existed here.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like the conversation Noah Lyle saw the other day. You can't call yourself world champions if the world is not included in the debate. So that's when you take it back. You can't call yourself basketball champions when there are clearly better players that exist in communities right around you. It's the same thing if you go back to baseball. You had Jackie Robinson dominating in the Negro League. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, you had persons celebrating themselves as the best outfielder, the best hitter. That's impossible for you to say when I can see with my own eyes somebody over there you are not allowing yourself to compete against that is performing better than you. That's how I look at that argument.
I don't disagree with it. But I still, like I say, I don't tarnish any championships because of it's just the league that you played in.
Every New York Giants Super Bowl is irrelevant to me.
Oh, that's a different story when it comes to that. But no, I agree with you. We honestly, I mean, we're living in a time now where we're seeing the best of the best. So we're lucky, and I don't think people appreciate that enough because. Yeah, if we grew up in the 50s, let's just say we get transplanted back to the 50s. Man, we could go out there and play with that. Yes. I feel like that's how you would feel. Yes. Like, no, I could do something like this because they've been great athletes throughout the history of time. And Jim Brown played football. Like, these are just things. It's the American score. Like you say, if Jackie Robinson was doing this stuff in the Negro League, and then all of a sudden someone's saying, I'm the best in baseball. You could say I'm the best in the majors right now.
Right.
Like, you have to be specific to what they're the best in at. Because they actually, what the MLB took the Negro Leagues, and then they now said all the Negro League stats are considered, or players are considered major league players now. So they've changed that in their recent history to include, meaning, and this is something we spoke about a long time ago, Andre Rogers technically isn't the first Bahamian Major League Baseball player. And we could go on a whole to do about that. But it changes that part of history that the history that we grew up knowing theoretically is now different.
Yeah, but to just answer the caller's final point, when you look at players like Havlicek, when you look at players like Bill Russell, it's not degrading or disrespecting the legacy that they laid. But
those are generational players.
Those are generational players. My only concern or my only problem is how much did the other stuff, the social stuff, the political thing, what they could have done. A lot of stuff
does because... Yeah, you're right. They couldn't sleep at the same hotels. They couldn't take the same buses. They just didn't have the same amenities. The same thing I was saying with doctors, XYZ. Yeah. They weren't getting the proper treatment and care, and they were still going on doing what they were doing.
And I would take it a step further. I look at things like a lot of people look at the way free throws are shot today in the NBA. Things like that change because of players like Will Chamberlain and because of players like Bill Russell. Bill Russell was able to do all sorts of things from the free throw line. And dude was just like, no, we have to change the rules that he can't do that.
Oh, he could dunk?
He can jump from there. We can't allow that to happen. And you have the reports where people went to college and see him. People saw him do it. And it was like, nah, we can't allow this guy to do this in the NBA because it would change so much of the game. And to that effect, you see these things bear fruit years and years down the line because you see players like Steph Curry who's able to hit a shot from anywhere. Now you have to ask the question, back in the day, how many other players had the ability to shoot like that? We probably would never know because the game wasn't played like that. But yeah, it's like a ebb and flow, come and go in a situation like this.
Yeah, and you could look at the NBA right now. Yes, the three-point ball is big. But I feel the mid-range game's coming back. I feel the big man, the old...
Shout out Shea Gildress Alexander. Yeah.
But I feel like the Jokic-type players are making their comeback with the big men. Like, not saying they're super traditional,
right,
but they're more traditional than what they were because now they could do the inside-out game. And I feel the NBA is going... That's why this, even though threes are reigning in this series with the Knicks, I just feel that this is the way basketball needs to be played. Because Brunson goes in, he's going to shoot the mid-range. Haliburton, you know, if he takes the ball up to the free throw line... He's going to go and he's going to do two dribble back, step, and try to hit that three.
Yeah.
Like that's, but I mean, it's just fun basketball.
Yeah. But we're supposed to get into the NFL on the second half, so let's jump into it. Schedules are out. People are starting to book tickets. Flights are being prepared. Hotels are being booked.
I'm not going.
Go ahead.
I'm not going to Miami for any games.
Why, Josh?
I'll be watching them on TV.
Oh, boy.
For free.
So I want to do one Miami game. The Patriots are playing in Miami, I think either the first or the second week. I want to check that out. It's normally superhuman Miami during that time. But it's the only chance I'm not getting up to Boston to watch the Patriots because it's super cold very, very quickly up there. So I'm thinking about catching him down in Miami. I'm not sure yet. If not Miami, definitely New York.
It'd probably be a cheap ticket.
It normally is. Yeah. That's why it's most affordable to catch that one.
Yeah, I mean, I don't blame you if you're... It's something, and I know you do this with all your teams pretty much. You try to find the time of year to be able to say, I'm going to go watch the Lakers. I get all of that. Me, I waste my money on Dolphins, right? Got into a point where when I go to games, I'm used to covering them now.
All right.
So I have more enjoyment watching it on TV, knowing that I am outside of the it's almost like going to an office now with some of these games. Like when I went to the Portland game, Buddy gave me his tickets, and I'm sitting in the crowd, and I'm like, this is weird. Like, first, I don't have a table. I don't have my laptop. I don't have, like, all my equipment.
You don't have to make notes. You don't have to just watch it.
I
can just
watch it, and I was just like, wow, this is – I understand with the fans and everything. It is fun going to the games.
All right.
It's more fun when you go with people you know. Definitely. You make it a gathering. But if you enjoy the sport – and this is why I say do it. But I'm not doing it.
I got you.
I'm done with Miami. I mean, I'm not done with Miami. The problem is,
y'all always say that.
We say we're done with Miami, but we're not.
So let me put this out there to the listening audience, because they might not know this. The 10th year seniors group is made up predominantly of either current Miami Dolphin fans or former Miami Dolphin fans. And when I say former in the sense that they're just disgruntled with the team
right now. It's a loose term of former.
Yes. So,
situationship.
Away from all, I think John, Al, Dakari, they're all Dolphin fans. Myself, I'm a Patriot fan. I think Drew is a Colts fan. So we have an eclectic mix of team support.
So it's the old AFC East.
Yes.
That's what we are, the old AFC East.
But no, relative to this season, the schedule is out. AFC East teams have up there probably the easiest schedule. The Patriots have a slightly easier schedule because they don't play the one seeds. The Dolphins have the easier... No, we have an easier schedule than the Dolphins because we don't play the two seeds. The Dolphins play the two seeds. We play the three seeds. So what is your expectations for the season so far?
I'm not expecting anything. Like, I'm going into this season... I'm not looking at any rosters. I'm not going to get into the, who should we sign? Who should we not sign?
I wish I could have made him into this conversation.
I am just going to go into week one seeing what are we going to do.
So you think the Dolphins are going to start the season with Tyreek Hill?
Like I said, I'm not looking at anything going on transaction-wise for the Dolphins. All I know is... Week one, whatever team goes out there, just going to say, let me see what's going on.
All right. So way too early predictions. If you had to pick a Super Bowl right now based on what you know so far, who would you be leaning towards?
I could tell you it ain't going to be the 49ers because I don't know why they gave that man all that money. Like, no disrespect to Brock Purdy.
Okay.
But it's something with, you know, I think that this might be the most open season. Just like the NBA. There's a lot of people that could win it all.
Yeah.
Packers will have a chance. If the Steelers get their act together on offense, they have a chance. It's like
they're one quarterback away.
But this is the thing. Like, I feel the parity in the league right now is tremendous. And it's to the point where it's like, this is up for grabs. Like, yeah. But you know who I want to win? The Lions.
See, this was the space I was in when I looked over the schedule. There are six teams in either conference that can make a run. On the NFC side, you have the Lions, you have the Packers, you have the Niners. To a degree, you have the Cowboys. And, of course, you have teams like the Eagles. Yeah. So those five teams, and I'll throw the Buccaneers in there because they're slowly rebuilding. So those would be my six teams from the NFC that can make a run. Over on the AFC side, you have the Pittsburgh Steelers if they figure out this thing with Aaron Rodgers. Of course, you have teams like
Buffalo,
Kansas City. You have over in the AFC South, to a degree, you have the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah. You know what team I think might shock people this season? Like, if there's a shocker team, and I don't know if it's that shocking, the Denver Broncos. I think the Denver Broncos is that sneak team that win the AFC West.
I looked over their roster. They had the defense the last two seasons. I think they have the finishing piece. They made some amendments to their defensive back squad. They made some amendments to the linebacker squad. I just don't think they have enough from a wide receiver standpoint. Hear me
so
out,
you're
me
saying
out
they trade for Tyreek.
Hear me out carefully. There is a trade out there. There's two really quality wide receivers that are dangling out there. Brandon Ayuk over on the San Francisco 49ers, Tyreek Hill over at the Dolphins. If they can make a move for one of them, I think they have a really good young quarterback. I think they can make a run. They always play Kansas City tough. Mm-hmm. They have two tremendous games against Kansas City every year. I think if they could find a wide receiver, they could get over the hump and make a decent playoff run.
Yeah, no, I think Denver's always that sleeper. They're literally always one or two players away.
Right.
From one on each side of the ball that makes that big difference. And if they get it, yeah, no. Because the Chargers will be out of the AFC West off the bat.
Yeah.
So it'll be Denver,
Kansas City.
That's
the Dolphin fan at him speaking up because they have this weird tour versus, what's the guy's from the Chargers name again?
Justin Herbert.
Too long. Y'all got to figure it out. But the two other big storylines coming out of the NFL offseason so far is, of course, the draft. Any feedback where you on the draft and how it laid out?
Draft's too long. We should make the draft great again and have two-day drafts.
I think 2 days is at this point. A lot of the stuff, granted, for like the diehard football fans, that second day could be tremendous. But this stretching out night one, the entire first round, is too slow.
You know what's upsetting to talk about draft? The NBA draft's 2 days now.
It is, but that second day, nobody really pays attention.
Yeah, but it should just be one day. Yeah. Like, this is what I remember as a kid. I remember watching the draft on Saturday and wanting to get the Miami Herald on Sunday.
To see all of
to see what's going on.
Yeah, that's how it should be.
That was
the
dream. And then, you know, Sunday, you're literally going out. Oh, so-and-so in the fifth round. Oh, cool. Like, no one, you need to stop this first round. Second round has their own.
I don't think you gotta stop it. I think what you have to, of course, the first round doesn't need an entire night to itself. There's not enough storylines, and this is where we get to this overhyped nature of now being forced to watch who falls, because that's the only thing you can pay attention to. You talk about the skill of that player. You're now focused on who didn't get called and how far they fall. And that turns us to the point of Shedeur Sanders. What do you think the Browns are doing?
This is the most confusing thing. This is Miami Dolphin-esque. It does not make sense to take Dillon Gabriel in the third round.
Right.
Right? And then in the fifth round, you take Sanders. Like
Dillon Gabriel, you have to prove that he can throw a ball beyond 25 yards.
No, Dillon Gabriel throws a better ball than Shedeur.
He does not. He does not.
He throws a tighter spiral than Shedeur. Boy. Yes, he does. Shedeur has way more upside. The problem with Dillon... And trust me, I watched Dillon extensively because he started at UCF, right? He went to Oklahoma, then he went to Oregon. Dillon's pocket presence is way better than Shedeur.
This is wild.
No. It's true. And he has a quicker release than Shedeur.
He has a quicker release.
But
I could give you that.
But his spiral is tighter. I'm telling you, his spiral is tighter. Upside of Shedeur, he's just a better athlete. He is going to be the type of... I don't know, compare it to a point, but Shedeur is more Kyler Murray, where Dillon would be more. Dillon is actually more Tua type player, but with a weaker arm. Yeah, his arm isn't the strongest, but he's a time passer. That's what he is.
Shedeur, and this is the NFL.
Where Shedeur is going to win. Just like I thought the Giants pick of Jackson Dart, or whatever his name is, was stupid. I thought my opinion.
No, of course they did. And I think this is where the Deion Sanders factor played into the draft. Him getting in teams there saying, hey, I don't want my son there. I don't want my son to be there. I don't want my son to do that. That kind of messed up everybody's big board.
Here's the thing. For Cleveland to draft him, right? And this is where conspiracies start coming. Was it something where Cleveland went to the team and said, we want Shedeur. We could draft him out here. But let's teach him a lesson and let him fall. And when we have a chance. Because...
I take it a step further. I think it is that kind of collusion.
Yeah. I mean,
I think it has more to do with finances than it does teaching them a lesson. Because the way you could kind of structure the contract of a fifth round pick going down the line compared to second or third round pick, it's completely different.
But see, here's the thing. My opinion, Dillon's going to get cut. Yeah. I think he's going
to
get cut.
So you wasted a third round to prove a point.
Yeah. That's what I feel. Unless... they trade him for like a future fifth, sixth round pick. See what he does in preseason type thing. Because you know what team might be willing to trade a fifth, sixth round pick for him?
Go ahead.
The Saints.
Why?
Because your boy ain't playing no more.
Okay.
Which and was a shocker.
No, it's not a shocker. And this is why teams have to be very careful when you have to understand. Of course, everybody listening is going to say, oh, Carter, you armchair quarterback in that. No, I'm the kind of football person that thinks about it like this. Don't leave anything to hope.
Mm-hmm.
You had no idea what you're going to get in Derek Carter's upcoming season. Why go into a quarterback-heavy draft and say, we're just going to pick a player to supplement what we have at QB, not to be the difference at QB? And I think that's where the Saints messed up.
But that's why I feel like it had to be collusion with all the owners and fair the GMs. Point. Because you can't tell me. This is like when Randy Moss dropped in the NFL draft. I was like 12. It was 1999?
Yeah.
So I was 13, 14, somewhere around there, 14. I remember I was cursing. I was at Mr. T's. Cursing at the TV because you're allowed to do that at Mr. T's at any age back in the day. And I was like, why are we? And then we ended up trading the pick to Minnesota. And I said, oh, my God, like what? And it was just like there's some players that you look at, you have to take the baggage sometimes. And me with Shador, I wouldn't have let him got out the second round.
Right.
Even Miami, I was to the point like, boy, Miami should just draft him, especially knowing the history of, like you say, we didn't know what was going to happen with Derek Carr. We know what's going to happen with Tua, unfortunately. He's going to miss games. You need to be able to pull someone in there. So to me, it was just I think it was a Deion thing for sure. Then being Deion's son doesn't help with the attitude you pick up in just in general. Like,
I don't want to call it attitude. What I've been wording it at the majority of this offseason is you pick up a certain level of understanding of how the business of the league. People going into the NFL for the first time don't see that.
Mm-mm.
They don't understand the business component to it. He's coming in with that knowledge because you don't only have a dad that played in the NFL. You had a dad that orchestrated a lot of the business in the NFL. Mm-hmm. He's one of the first players that really flipped the league, as we would say. Go into our next team and immediately making that team Super Bowl. He's that kind of guy. So that gives you a kind of insight that a lot of players don't have.
Yeah, no. I just thought it was, to me, in my opinion, I would have taken him earlier. If I was the Browns, I wouldn't have done the Dylan Gabriel thing. I would have just taken him in the third round. I just think that's a waste of a pick for the Browns. But then also, that goes to show the Browns organization with Deshaun Watson, XYZ. They don't really make the best choices.
That's true. But we have about 5 or so minutes left. We want to touch on some baseball. It's been a tough ride for the Yankees so far this season. They're back atop the AFC East. The AL East. Josh Chisholm is supposed to be back this week. Any information that you may have come across from Josh that could give us a bit of information on how it's looking?
I ain't got no inside information, but I've seen him on Instagram looking fine. And, you know, he's giving jerseys out to fans. So, you know, Jazz is always going to be in an upbeat mood.
Recorded it the week before I dropped this past week with Fat Joe. He looks confident. He looks happy. He looks like he's in the right frame of mind. So,
yeah, I know. And the thing is, he's going to have his slumps. He's streaky. But what he's going to give you is going to give you everything every single game.
Right.
Like, I believe that's why he might get injured a lot, because every play is all out. And sometimes when you do that, you just, you know, as you get older, even though he's young, just little things are going to be like, oof, that must. But I do still think he needs to go hit the gym more.
Right. Fair point. Any other guys in the minor leagues?
Oh, Sebastian Walcott is going crazy. Like, he's going crazy. The stats are, in his last 6 games, I think it's like 3 home runs and 6 RBIs. And it's just been, he's the next one who's going to get called up. I think he has a chance getting called up this year. Like, that's how...
I'm actually at the pace now watching it. Either, in my mind, I'm saying right after All-Star break.
Yeah,
there's a chance. The way he's on fire right now, I think those are the kind of guys that you want to have. Just if you need to pull somebody up, that's the guy you're looking at.
I think it's this year he might get called up, because he's going to be just like Jazz was. Once he gets called up, he's not going back to get called up. That's why they're always careful to call some of these players up and putting them down. So if it's, like you say, after All-Star break, next year for sure he's going to be in the major leagues. Like, it's like he's just that talented. He is going to be by far the best Bahamian baseball player ever. My favorite thing was someone wrote on Twitter and said...
You're saying that a bit fast. I just want you to slow that down so the public can hear. So,
Sebastian Walcott's going to be the best Bahamian baseball player of all time. Right now.
Explain to them why. Because a lot of people...
He has all the tools.
Okay.
He has all the tools. He's got the arm. He's got the bat. He's got the... Like, he's a five-tool player.
He's a difference maker.
He's a five-tool player. Like, but... I loved on Twitter, someone said, oh, what's Jazz going to think about this with the Bahamas? And Jazz is like, no, I want little bro to be better than me. And this is the attitude that we have in general.
All right.
I think with our professional athletes now, I made it, but you need to be better than me.
This is something I was shooting the breeze with somebody about. Because we're now in the podcast space. Well, Tim Hyas has been in the podcast space. And I mean, us as a country listening. I would pay good money to see a podcast, like a sit-down barbershop format of all of our professional athletes right now, to have a Jazz, to have a Buddy, to have a growth and the development of sports in this country. I think that would be a tremendous. This me saying it to John on the radio,
because he's the guy who's making it happen. We probably could make that happen. It'd have to be, the only difficult thing would be the Jazz, because baseball plays in the summer.
Right.
But it could be I could reach out to people and do it, but... We just have to figure out what it is, because I feel like it'll just go off rail a little, because it'll be more enjoyment of them catching up than talking about some of these issues that we could fix.
I pay good money for it. But of course, as John said, Walcott has the chance to be, if not the best, one of the best MLB prospects from the Bahamas. So it's something to look forward to. Hopefully we have him before the end of the season. But this has been the Accredited. Thank you for joining us today. Hope to see you next week.